Alien from Aldebaran, I think that was channeled and probably visited some of the meetings of the German secret societies. When I saw her drawing, I said, gee, Elvira, the Queen of Darkness. Some black, very interesting vibes from the photograph. Compared to the Russian contacts, the German secret societies were deep into black magic, into Satanism, into ritual abuse, into ritual sacrifice, into child abuse, into ritual child sacrifice, and so on. Basically, it was very obvious that the German secret societies have been working with aliens that have been subcontracting for the forces of darkness. And not strangely, they have been talking a lot about Agartha, the center of darkness on the planet. According to the metaphysical yellow pages, it is located somewhere on the South Pole. Probably again there is a physical and metaphysical Agartha. Not strangely then, the Germans chose the place of their major secret colony to be the South Pole, close to Agartha. So we see this pattern here that the two opposing polarities on our planet, Shambhala and Agartha, the yin and yang on a planetary level, there are much higher such levels on the galactic or even universal level, subcontract with two different sets of aliens to do their bidding for the side of the light and for the side of the darkness. During the Second World War, and we have a brilliant tape here with Al Bielek and Chan Johnson about the German secret societies. There were half a dozen alien races that worked with the German secret societies, and they all were subcontracting for Agartha, for the forces of darkness. That's why it's not strange that the Germans had their major ceremonies at midnight. Their uniforms were black, their cars were black, they loved the black decorum, they had these torch-bearing night ceremonies. Darkness was a very prominent feature in the German culture of the Third Reich. While the secret societies of Russia and England in the United States have been on the side of the light, of whiteness. That's why it's called the White Hall in England, or the White House in the United States, or even the White House in Russia of Yeltsin of these days. These are not coincidental names. On the contrary, these are very important indicators that the secret societies of these countries have been corresponding under the spell of this or that celestial management hierarchy. However, recently in the United States, through the coming of a lot of German scientists and through the workings of the secret of the Dark Brotherhoods, there have been a massive infiltration of black societies. So slowly, this country has been prepared and has probably moved to the forces of darkness in this yin and yang equation. There's a fascinating book written by a famous European psychic and visionary who lived in the 30s and 40s. His name was Rudolf Steiner. He lived in Switzerland. He was a thorn in the eye of the Nazis. They burned his first shrine and complex, educational complex. They built a second one out of concrete so that nobody could burn it. They made several assassination attempts on him. My feeling is that Steiner was working for the forces of light, and that's why the Germans were so angry with him, because they were obviously channeling the forces of darkness. According to, I'll come to Steiner in a second, the mayor of Danzig, a good friend of Hitler and all the Nazi elite who dropped out of the race just a few years before the end of the war, developed the ability to write in his pocket, to scribble memos of Hitler's speeches, and he got incredible illuminations from his long contact with Hitler.
he mentioned, and these are very rare books that are impossible to find here. One is called Hitler Speaks, and the other is called From the Abyss, the Evil from the Abyss, or something like that. He's the first one to mention that Hitler was talking about the new race. I've seen the new man and he is awesome. He also mentions very interesting remarks that Hitler had frequent nightly visitations in his room. I see him, he's in the corner, he's out there. He would shout and he would tremble, and his whole bed, his massive bed of German oak, would shake with Hitler in the middle. Obviously he had some visitations and some he was channeling for an entity. That information is confirmed by Billy Meyer in his very interesting talks. In 75, one of his fellow researchers asked him at a meeting, well, what do the Pleiadians think about the Thule Society? The Thule Society was already organizing in Berlin after the war. And he got a very interesting answer. Actually, the Pleiadians told Billy Meyer that a Pleiadian splinter faction, a militaristic alien faction, that was kicked off our planet about 10,000 years ago. It was kicked by the Pleiadian presence here on the planet then, 10,000 years ago. So they settled where? They settled around the Barnard Star. These guys came in the 20s of this century and settled in an abandoned, huge underground complex under the Giza Pyramid, and they became the well-known Giza Intelligences, or the Bafath people. And they didn't have very advanced technology. For example, their saucers would be shot by our ground-to-air rockets. But in compensation to that, they had extremely advanced mind-controlling techniques and remote mind control. And the nephew of their Earth-based commander, Comrade Aruziak, his pet project was Nazi Germany. And according to Billy Meyer, Hitler was channeling in his speeches to the German folk nobody else but Comrade Aruziak, Kamarad Aruziak, from the Giza, from under the Giza Pyramid. It is well known again from Hitler's biographers that at the end of his speech he would be carried on his force, literally by his bodyguards, in a transfixed state. And these frenzied speeches were nothing more than channeled, basically a trance channeling, a trance oratory, where his soul was stepping back and Aruziak was taking over. Even crazy tabloid stories about Hitler being a vampire, a blood-drinking vampire, which wouldn't amuse me at all, because there was an article in Newsweek magazine recently that allegedly Vice President Al Gore had to drink blood very often because he had nosebleeds. Small article in the Newsweek. Probably to spin control and offset. Ask any hematologist to tell you what happens with the blood when it gets into the hydrochloric acid of your stomach juices. It gets digested, it gets destroyed. So if you lose blood through a bleeding, you don't drink the replacement. You shoot it intravenously. That little Al Gore article is probably intended to offset a recent publication on the East Coast that he allegedly was a member of a blood-drinking satanic cult that, by bringing their victims into a great fear before killing them, they stimulate the release of endorphins, fear of endorphins in the blood of the victim. And at the moment of killing, the blood is drained and these endorphins stay in the blood. So when you drink from that blood later on, you get an endorphin high. So this is nothing more than a satanic drug addiction, endorphin drug addiction, which explains why allegedly Comrade Gore would travel with a suitcase of refrigerated blood. In the 30s, rumors galore. In the 30s, we saw the documentary film. Now, from rumors, we jumped to documentaries. In the 30s, it was enough for somebody to be a homosexual so that to control him totally. And that is the personal story of J. Edgar Hoover. In that film that was shown, they allege his homosexual activities, even his pedophile activities. I bet he was probably a pedophile homosexual, as most of the politicians are. Reading the book by that Nebraska senator, John DeCamp or Van DeCamp, about the Lincoln and Savings racket of my pedophile pornography, and I mean it was a whole ring, pornographic ring, where they would supply high politicians in Washington from the Senate and the highest places with children. It's a horrific book, and what they explain, I mean, which were normal activities there. So now, with homosexuality out in the open, it's not enough to keep a control of a politician anymore. So you have to have something more on him. So I don't think that stories about that alleged fancy of President Gore, or even stories of Bill Clinton and his alleged, I know a researcher who would only say that every Monday is a full moon in Little Rock. Bill Clinton and his wife and their coterie of buddies and political friends there would do their robes and would disappear in the woods, allegedly. So obviously these days homosexuality is not enough of a dirty linen in your closet to keep total control over you. And you have to have something more. And participation in such satanic and other black magic activities is obviously a very important mechanism of controlling politicians. In my feeling, it's not coincidental. On the contrary, it is a rule. You cannot go to the surface, to the very top of the power in Washington, unless you belong to such circles. I was joking 2-3 years ago about the name of Al Gore. What a funny name. What a gory name. How can you name a human being with such a name? Gore. 2 years later, I heard the story of his alleged blood drinking, whatever, habits. So, basically, American political elite has slowly been moving toward the black magic practices of Satanism. Now, An interesting note here. According to the Urantia book, Comrade Lucifer and Comrade Satan are two different personalities of a close rank, but Satan was a lieutenant of Lucifer, whatever. According to my personal understanding, Luciferian presence on the planet has been more associated with the center of light, with Shambhala. A lot of the Shambhalian written documents sport the five-pointed star of communism, of Freemasonry, and of the Luciferian presence on the planet. The standing upright five-pointed star. While Comrade Satan has been associated with the dark side of the universe, with black magic, with Satanism, with voodoo, and shamanism, and all other blood-letting and sperm-letting rituals that have been practiced in the terrestrial religions for thousands of years. So we see that even these important personages from the Bible have taken different polarities in this Agartha/Shambhala division on the planet. Back to Rudolf Steiner and his prophecies. He published close to 100 books and is considered one of the luminaries of European Enlightenment. And it is obvious for anyone who reads his books that he worked on the side of the light. and for Shambhala. He had a little book titled Lucifer and Ahriman. And in that book he said that probably, this is my paraphrasal, it's like the Yalta Conference on a celestial level, the way the Yalta Conference partitioned Europe for the different spheres of influence, the way a similar celestial Yalta Conference has partitioned our planet time-wise, epoch-wise, for different influences. 4,000 years ago, 2,000 years before Christ, it was Lucifer's turn to incarnate in Babylon as Baal, to try his hand at planetary management and creation of a paradise on earth. 4,000 years ago, that was Shambhala's attempt. Plus their ongoing work with the Eastern philosophies in Asia and Russia. 2,000 years ago, it was the turn of the Trinity. Strangely enough, if you read the Urantia book, there is no mentioning about Shambhala or Agartha. Basically, the Trinity is a standalone hierarchy which has nothing to do with Shambhala or Agartha, with the light or the darkness. So 2,000 years ago, it was the turn of Christ to try his hand at planetary management. And according to Rudolf Steiner, and I repeat again, I don't channel, I am not in contact with anyone. I just travel around, listen to crazy stories, read books, and try to figure it out for myself. According to Rudolf Steiner, the next one to incarnate on the planet is not Lucifer. He already did that 4,000 years ago. It's not Christ. He did that 2,000 years ago. This doesn't mean that there will not be a second coming. It's not Satan, but it's Comrade Ahriman. Now, here, who is Ahriman and what place does he have in the celestial hierarchy? In my humble understanding, I would quickly talk about different celestial managers and try to hang them on the Christmas tree of our universe, like Christmas ornaments. These managers on this branch, these managers on that branch. There are celestial management, basically spiritual beings, angelic beings, of a local kind, of a local, let's say, continental kind, of a planetary level, of a solar system level, of a galactic level, and on and on and on. Basically, every bigger entity or agglomeration of bodies in the universe that we see, and even beyond that, these that we do not see, have their corresponding management structures, in my humble personal understanding. If we read the OASPE book, OAHSPE, a channeled material in the 1860s, my feeling is that the OASPE book is the next installment and the first written revelation of the Jehovian management presence after the Old Testament. The Old Testament, after all, is all about Jehovah and a little bit about the weather, to use an old Brezhnev political joke from Russian times. There is nothing about the Trinity, there is very little about Christ, and very little about other things that belong to the Trinity in the Old Testament. On the contrary, if you compare the Old Testament and the OASPE Bible, you realize that probably this was the first version of the revelation of the same management hierarchy. According to the OASPE Bible, the Jehovian hierarchy is located in the etheric layers around planet Earth, and only around planet Earth and nowhere else but planet Earth. So basically this is like a local planetary community school for spiritual progression of your soul. If you choose Jehovah to be your savior, great, you sign for his university, and after graduation you continue elsewhere in the universe. And after reading that book, you realize that that's probably a very valid management hierarchy. I mean, there are so many interesting details that cannot be found anywhere else. Then, let's talk about Billy Meyer's revelation about our galaxy, our universe, and the aliens living in that universe. My feeling is that it is a very valid revelation of an alien race that lives 500 light years, which is literally next door neighbors in our galaxy, because our galaxy is 150,000 light years, so 150,000. This is 0.5, so this is 1/300. So it's like, what is it, like 0.3% of the size of the diameter of the galaxy. It's literally next door neighbor, down the block, down the street, basically, half a block from us. And through the 8,000 pages that he revealed, we realize that the Pleiadians are in contact with more advanced beings in our galaxy, which are in contact with more advanced beings in the Andromeda galaxy, which are tutored by even more advanced beings in the Tao universe, and on and on and on and on, all the way up to 10 to the 49th power, one with 49 zeros of levels of such hierarchy of progression along the Pleiadian universe. Let's call it the Pleiadian universe. Then I started reading the Urantia book, trying to figure out, well, how these parallel universes work. And soon I realized that I have opened the door for myself to the worlds of the Trinity. It's a massive 2200 page treatise channeled in the 30s and officially released around the 50s in the Library of Congress. And this is the universe according to the Trinity, the next and the first written installment after the New Testament. Despite the numerous New Age attacks on Christianity, which are all valid, as far as the crude, brutal, primitive, and castrated version of Christianity that we've been practicing on this planet, with all the religious wars and persecution of witches and other religions, and on and on and on and on. Despite this brutal practice of Christianity, if one reads the Urantia book, he realizes that the management hierarchies of the Trinity have nothing to do with that. That once you clear all the internal dirt from your soul, then you would be able, you would be allowed to enter into these hierarchies. The interesting thing about the Urantia book is that, put in one sentence, my feeling, my personal feeling, and this is one of the biggest puzzles about that book for myself, is that the hierarchy of the Trinity is a management effort that is located at our local group of about a dozen galaxies. Our dozen or so planets travel as a package with our sun within our galaxy. This is a solar system. Then the galaxy travels as a package of 150 or so billion stars in our universe, one galaxy. Then the next size of universal packaging comes in the shape of a local group. Our local group has about a dozen galaxies, big and small. The Magellanic clouds are two little companion mini galaxies, like galactic-sized satellites of our Milky Way galaxy. But all of these form the local group of galaxies. Any astronomer would, in any astronomical textbook or even in popular articles in National Geographic. So basically the Urantia book reveals the Trinity, which is a management effort centered in possibly a supermassive black hole, which is the astronomical, gravitational, and whatever geometrical center of our local group, where the seat of the Trinity is. And they manage 100 trillion planets. So it's 100,000 billion planets, which is about the number of planets in our local group. This is, again, a very little grain of sand relative to the size of our universe, because the next size of packaging beyond the local group is already the supercluster, which has not 10 galaxies, but 70,000 galaxies. And it again travels as a package through the universe, probably spinning around its center. Even bigger black hole the size of a galaxy itself, probably. And that supercluster is still a grain of sand relative to the size of our universe. Even the Pleiadians themselves, with their advanced technology, had a hard time figuring out how big our universe is, so they had to get help from the Tao universe to figure this most simple thing, to measure their own planet.
what Magellan did 300 years ago, Pleiades have been doing in the last, whatever, thousands of years, trying to figure out how big our universe is. However, Billy Meyer heard that some of his tutors were coming actually not from our universe, but from the next door neighbor universe. Nobody knows how many galaxies or local groups or superclusters of galaxies are in our universe alone. So, all the major terrestrial religions, despite their crude, brutal terrestrial interpretations and bloodletting and all the primitiveness that has been going on our planet, still are revelations about some management efforts on different level of this universe around us. And these are all very local efforts. The Jehovian management hierarchy is a planetary endeavor. The Trinitarian management hierarchy is an endeavor of a local group of a dozen galaxies, not more, with plans to spread their influence in the local cluster of about 70,000 galaxies in the coming universal future of billions of years. Back to the Luciferian presence and the Pleiadians, there were several hundred, maybe thousands of planets that chose the side of the independent angels in the Lucifer Rebellion, which were part of our sector of our galaxy. In the Trinitarian nomenclature and management subdivisions, each galaxy is divided into 10,000 administrative units, which they call local universes, but this is not the whole universe, it's just a small piece of the pie of the galaxy, a small sector of the galaxy. Because there are 150 billion stars in a galaxy, in a local universe there are only 10 million planets, so it's a very much, much smaller part than the whole galaxy. So, the empire of Michael of Nebadon, according to the Urantia book, who came in his last incarnation to our planet as Christ Michael, is a small chunk of the Milky Way galaxy that has 10 million planets. Out of these 10 million planets, again, a small part of them choose the side of the Lucifer Rebellion. So, the Pleiadians, their revelations, and 90% of the aliens that come to the planet are not coming from the viewpoint of the Trinity, they are coming from the viewpoint of the independent angelic presence, or from viewpoints of even other and endless number of management efforts beyond our comprehension in number, indeed, in our universe and beyond. How big is this whole thing? Nobody really knows, because Billy Meyer, being the inquisitive kid that he always is, asked his tutor lady from the Tao universe, well, okay, you're our next door neighbor universe. He knows from them that the universe is shaped like an egg, so this is our egg, our universe, and your egg, the Tao universe, is next to it. Is this all? Are there any other universes? Sure, yeah. How many? Don't worry. Endless number. Well, I want to know. How many? Don't worry. More than enough. I want a number. How many universes are there? How many eggs in this bigger basket are out there? And he was given a number that was something like 10 to the power of 740,000, which means one with 740,000 of zeros. Of other universes, each one of them as big as our own universe, which the Pleiadians couldn't even figure out how the hell it is big, and each of these big egg-shaped universes has the unlimited number of galaxies and local groups and superclusters. And of all this incredible thing that is around us, all our management efforts and all our religions and all these hierarchies are such a small picture. The Jehovian hierarchy is a planetary effort. The Trinity hierarchy is a local group effort. The Luciferian presence is a chunk of our galaxy effort, basically a little section of our galaxy. Many of the aliens that come to our planet are coming from different religions, from different viewpoints, from different management systems. Who's right? I had this simple, stupid question. First, I read the Billy Meyer Chronicles. Gee, the greatest revelation.
Then I started reading the Urantia book. Something's fishy here. Well, the Billy Meyer talks about his things, doesn't talk about the Urantia book, and vice versa. So who's right? First or the second? Nah, forget about Billy Meyer. The Urantia book is everything. Then I think a little bit more. And so I oscillated between the two for a long time. Then came the Waspy Bible for me, the Waspy book. And instead of figuring out who's right, I realized that instead of these two polarities, now I have three. Who the hell's right now? The first, the second, the third? And then little by little for myself, I realized that, well, it's like that story, that proverbial story, fable, about the blind experts examining the elephant. Each one of them touched an extremity and came out with a diameter, with a size, the tail, the trunk, the foot, the stomach. And they said, well, no, these are all different diameters. Only one is right, everything else is wrong. So in most of our fratricidal religious wars and battles on the planet, these have been blinds fighting and bloodletting each other about the size of their management. No, it's not your diameter, it's my diameter. Because each of these religions are nothing more than a viewpoint, a cross-section of the universe. Instead of fighting among these blinds who is correct, what can be done is to try to invent not a two-dimensional figure like the circle, but a more complicated three-dimensional topological shape, a figure like the shape of an elephant, that would contain in itself the small size diameter of the tail, the bigger size diameter of the trunk, the bigger size diameter of the foot, and the bigger size diameter of the stomach. So all of them would be different and correct in the same time. I've been trying to do for myself a similar synthesis of these different philosophies. Well, the easiest thing would be to discard either the Billy Meyer or the Urantia book or the Waspy or any one of the three that you like. And they are not three or 33, but 3,000,003 that have been introduced on our planet. The more difficult thing is to try to create mentally a more complicated structure that would include both the Billy Meyer revelation and the Urantia book. Then you can add a third polarity to it, then a fourth, and so on. And basically this is my biggest hobby. In my spare time when I don't deal with the Germans and with anti-gravity. So we realize that we have a multiple paradigm in the universe, that basically each of these revelations coming to us that originated somewhere on the universal floors of existence is coming from a universal philosophy that is nothing more than a viewpoint of the universe, like a cross-section of this microphone. If you do an engineering drawing of a microphone, you would need this section, that section, then parts, each part, and so on. A more complicated thing like a car engine would have not three or five drawings, would have probably 150 sheets, big sheets of drawings, each part separated, then all of them blocks combined, and finally the whole thing into many cross sections. All of them would be different, but instead of fighting among each other, well, who's correct? Only one can be right, all of them are wrong. No, all of them are correct, simply these are different angles of vision, different cutting planes on this way more complex thing, an internal combustion engine. If you get a nuclear power plant, it would have not a few hundred or a few thousand drawings, but probably this room would be full of sheets of drawing of all the things that would go in a giant thing like a nuclear power plant. All of them are different, and at the same time, all of them are correct because they're little viewpoints of a much bigger thing. Now imagine a thing like the universe, that the drawings of an universe would fill in a library probably as big as a solar system. And if we start arguing, well, who's correct? Well, all of them are correct. Simply these are viewpoints of something that is way more complex than we can even imagine. How much more complex this is, Billy Meyer has, I'm sorry though, Urantia book has a very interesting small little paragraph that I was really astonished when I read. Very often they would mention, well, It's very difficult in your limited language of your realm of mortals in the flesh to explain these lofty ideas of us, the angelic beings. And I even felt sometimes that this was a little bit not very modest, in a way, always pointing how primitive we are, until I read this little paragraph that actually the language of the Trinitarian center of our galaxy has a root vocabulary of 1.5 billion words. No linear combination, just root vocabulary of different words are 1.5 billion. Now, that language compared to the 250,000 Oxford Dictionary of English that nobody of us uses, we barely use 20,000 in our most advanced forms of literature, is as unfavorable to us as our language is compared to the 100 or so words of Coco, the gorilla that was trained by that anthropologist, to understand simple words. Like Coco is taken out on a walk every morning and Coco communicates in a sign language, "Hurry, hurry, behind the corner, Coco drinks Coke," because Coco knows there is a Coke machine behind the corner, and every morning they would buy him a Coke. So I suddenly realized the pangs and the pains of the authors of these papers in Urantia book or any other revelations, be it alien or angelic or whatever sort, or whatever source is the level this revelation coming from the universe, how to explain to us in the limited 100-word capacity of Coco the gorilla, complex ideas like United Nations, for example, modern education, or nuclear energy, or so on. As much as you can explain what nuclear energy is working with a vocabulary of 100 words, as much the higher levels of existence in the universe can explain to us what the universe is about, working with our vocabulary of 200,000 words. So it is really very comical on all this immense magnitude. The universe is way more complex than we can even imagine, to realize how sad our fratricidal religious wars on the planet have been. Fighting for what? I mean, these are just different viewpoints of something that we cannot even comprehend. Enough about the celestial management. The end of the millennia, the coming end times, and the multiple paradigms. I love the joke by Sean Morton that he... Oh, it's an ancient joke. Two disciples sit with their enlightened master and argue. And the first disciple says, "I think it is the wind fluttering the flag." The second disciple says, No, I think it is the flag that shakes and moves the wind." The master spanks them on the heads and says, "No, you dummy idiots. It is all in your mind. It is the mind that flutters the flag." So basically, in many of the Eastern religions, it is mentioned often that all around us is just an illusion that is created for our educational and advancement purposes. That our reality is nothing more than a giant universe-size holodeck where the higher beings create this master show.
Play virtual reality games.
Virtual reality games. That's why the virtual reality is so hyped up these days by the Illuminati, because they would be using it for mind control and for negative manipulation. So my feeling is that I think the government has mastered the technology of the holodeck, creation of a reality out of nothing. Not only visible reality. I've heard stories long time ago that they travel back in time to the times of Christ, photographed in a 3D holographic camera the crucifixion on Calvary, and then played the film in a probably big warehouse or some empty space to a choice government group. And when you turn the projector on, you have Calvary in front of you as if you are there. Or for that matter, any other famous happening in our terrestrial history. Not only holographic images, but in the holodeck you have a solid reality. If you play with the universal constant, you can create a solid reality, probably not much more different than a holographic image. So if we can do it, obviously gods can do it too.
We're reducing this to its reality.
I'm trying to figure out for myself how come that we have different predictions for the end of our century coming from different management hierarchies. The fundamental Christians believe that there would be an Armageddon type end time scenario straight out of the revelations of the Bible. The New Agers think that it would be a smooth, rosy, New Agey transition in the fourth dimension. The alien freaks, the ET contactee, the contactee freaks think that, gee, it would be the alien saucers that would come and pick us up off the planet just before everything breaks loose. Maybe all of these realities would be played out simultaneously and many more. And maybe we with our minds are actually creating, and I mean coming back to the final topic of our conversation, this everything up to now has been a preparation for this final topic, mind control. Maybe we are our own creators of our own reality. I was dead afraid of getting a flat on a freeway at my usual speed of 90-95 miles an hour, and I got three flats at that speed, the last one on a downhill tight curve downhill from Mount Shasta, 95 miles an hour, front tire exploding. But the moment I stopped fearing that, I stopped getting flat tires. So if we are very afraid of something, we would get that reality attracted to us like a powerful magnet. Uh-huh. Or if we, on the other hand, if we want badly something to happen to us, we would attract that reality too. So we are coming to the thought forms in our mind. The thoughts in our mind today are the actual, the literal shapers of our reality tomorrow in the most steely and concrete and hard way you can imagine. So not only on my personal level with my flat tire or my desire to build an anti-gravity device have I attracted thousands of such strange cases where people come to me and will be giving me information about anti-gravity, will be bringing me projects that they build or gadgets that they created and so on. But in my bigger reality about the turn of the century, I may be creating that with the power, with the thoughts in my mind. Can you imagine then the combined thought power of nations or even whole global population to bring about this or that reality? Billy Meyer and his Pleiadians have been very careful not to reveal, for example, he was taken forward in time to see a major destruction of a major American city with a natural calamity. And he photographed that with his 8mm camera. And I know some researchers that have seen the film. Same city. I mean, you see famous landmarks, quite destroyed. However, he was not told about the time this is going to happen. They were trying to back-engineer the time through the models of the cars that they saw in the photograph. And interestingly enough, our cars have been slowly converging to the models that they saw in that film. The film was shot 20 years ago, and it was viewed by this researcher like 5 to 10 years ago. And it would probably take place in the near 5 years. Anyway, they don't want to tell the time that this calamity would happen because people may really bring it with their own mind. Actually, they told Billy that, gee, you travel forward in time, let's say a big earthquake is going to hit some island somewhere,